Hi, it's Jeff, host of the podcast. Imagine a world where planning your books is as fun as writing them, where plotters plot in heroic harmony and pantsers organize without overwhelm. Here's the thing, that world exists. Plotters and pantsers alike love the visual outlining and story Bible software Plotter, now available both online and as a web app. Named the number one outlining app for productivity by Kindlepreneur, Plotter turns outlining and organizing your books into the creative process it's supposed to. Visit plotter.com/RW today. That's plotter.com/RW today. And experience the difference yourself. Welcome back to the Reading and Writing Podcast. My guest today is Daniel Church, author of the new novel, The Hollows. Author Ramsey Campbell, multiple World Fantasy Award winner, wrote about The Hollows. The Hollows combines human monstrousness and uncanny dread in a breathlessly suspenseful narrative. Startlingly violent, compellingly weird, it carries us through levels of fear to a climax of cosmic terror worthy of the classics. Daniel, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, thanks for having me on, Jeff.
Absolutely. Well, if someone listening hasn't yet heard about your novel, The Hollows, how would you describe the novel?
My agent described it as Stephen King writes Fargo, which I quite liked. But it's a horror novel set in the Peak District, which is for listeners outside the UK is sort of in the area of sort of overlaps into Derbyshire and Yorkshire mostly, with some bits in Lancashire. So it's a lot of hills, a lot of moors, and a lot of some communities there can end up being quite isolated, can get very easily cut off in bad weather, which is basically what's happening to the small village of Barstall at the beginning of the novel. And in the middle of all the freezing snow, the local police constable Ellie Cheatham finds a body frozen in the snow, and it's the body of a local sort of tearaway called Tony Harper. He's from what you might call a problem family. Seems to have frozen to death. However, he's frozen to death in sight of his own home. He's clutching a knife in his hand. This is not a kid who would normally, you know, get lost that easily, or have, you know, nothing. Not someone who'd be easily intimidated. So the question of what frightened him so much is that he ended up sort of freezing to death rather than making for his own house, a very short distance away, and there's a mysterious mark beside the body, and then people start to disappear, and something is moving in the darkness, picking people off, and then the snow cuts the village off, and the power goes out.
Well, do you remember the original idea or impetus? What's that?
Yeah, I do, actually. It had quite a strange genesis. I became friends in sort of the early 2010s with a friend of mine, Debbie Pearson. She was a friend of mine. So we did one of these things where you basically have very similar senses of humor, very similar outlooks on a lot of things. So you become very, very good friends without actually ever meeting in real life. And she and her partner at the time were trying very hard to start a family, and finally succeeded. And then 2 weeks before the child was born, she came home and found her partner dead, which, you know, as you imagine, was absolutely appalling. And she said, you know, the funeral was going to be on such a date, and anybody who would like to attend, you know, you'd be more than welcome. And so, you know, given that where she lived was fairly isolated, I decided to make the trip out there. So I travelled by train, which was about a 4-hour journey, because it's quite an out of the way little place. And on the way, I sort of got out a pen and paper and started to doodle. You know, tried to sort of write something, and I opened with, and I found the line, Ellie crouched down and peered down the slope at the body, and wrote for about a couple of pages on this. And the setting became somewhere in Derbyshire, because that's where I was going. And I had no idea how to continue this on. I could tell this was possibly going to be the setup for a novel, and I was already writing one novel at the moment, thank you very much, and I did not want to try and be taking on two at the same time. So I put it aside, and I actually lost the original notes. But that opening scene stayed in what I'd written of it stayed in my head for years afterwards. And when I finally decided to actually try, I mean, usually I'd planned my novels out in advance, but without much success. But at this particular point, I was like, okay, let's just try starting with very little idea of where you're going on for maybe plan a few chapters ahead at a time and see where you go. And I dug up that scene and started with it. And The Hollows was the result, basically. And it wrote itself with surprisingly easy. And of course, I was able to contact this friend of mine and sort of say, so, you know, this little village where you live, what happens in the winter? And what? So I was able to get an awful lot of, you know, very direct on the ground feedback on what would work and what wouldn't. And that's just how the story came about. And one of the things you find, of course, you ask this, I wasn't even sure at first if it would be a supernatural threat or something more human in origin, and I was about 8 or 9 chapters in before I made a decision on that. And you know, of course, I found myself kind of like rooting through all the folklore of Derbyshire and of the Peaks, which is very rich, and there was an awful lot of stuff which I very quickly found I could kind of weave into the mythology I was trying to create, and it all just came together very, very, very easily and very, very enjoyably, except for the fact that I really had to. There's a dog I had to really work to keep alive, because my wife loves dogs, and she would have been very, very cross with me if anything had happened to this animal. So every human in the story could have been killed. The entire planet could have been destroyed and all life on Earth rendered extinct, but that dog would still have had to have been alive somehow. So there may be a slight spoiler there. There is a dog who does not get killed. But that's the only spoiler. That's the only major plot spoiler you're going to get out of me.
Okay. So I'm curious, given your experience with this novel, do you think that you will try to write future novels without much extensive planning beforehand?
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. It's I find it much more exciting. And a lot of the time as well, you can be much more in the moment with your characters, because you are only looking for you only you if you only have if you only sort of have anything in your mind in any kind of detail, if you a scene or two ahead, you're very much focused on what they're going through there, and you get much. Your characters can then surprise you with what they discover about themselves, with what they find themselves wanting to do. They can often come up with much better and more complicated plots than you ever could. I was actually stuck for. I'd recently finished one project, and I was trying to start a new one, and it wasn't going anywhere. And I was finally stuck. So I asked my wife, who was just give me a word, any word. She gave me a word, and I wrote a sentence containing that, and. Yeah, I'm 40,000 words into the next novel based on that, and I had absolutely no clue where that one was going originally. So
just based on one word.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you create one sentence leads to another, and then as you go on within the first chapter, I had a bit more of an idea about what was going to be happening, but not all of it. But I'm getting more of a grip on. I think I know roughly how it's going to end, but there's still time for stuff to get weird in between now and then. Well, it's a much more exciting way to work, I find.
That's great. Well, I understand that after college, as you were trying to write novels and short stories, you worked a succession of dead-end jobs, you say, office worker, fast food, training administrator, call center worker. I'm curious, what kept you writing as you were working on those jobs?
A desperate need to not be just, it's one of these things I always like to think of myself. I always knew I wanted to be, when I was at college, The course I did was one where you could do writing work, you could work, do directing work, acting work. It was training you largely to be something of an all rounder. But it's very easy to call yourself a writer, you know, when you're at college, you're not actually doing much. You maybe produce the odd bit of the stuff from now between now and then. But when you actually have to leave college and you have to start working some kind of job, however crappy, to keep body and soul together, then if you want to call yourself a writer, you have to write. And so a lot of that was to, you know, to sort of feel that I was a writer, that I was actually doing something worthwhile, something that I cared about. It's very much become a compulsive thing for me, and something that I think, you know, does my mental health a great deal of good, you know, on a day-to-day basis. Or at least I'd be an awful lot worse if I didn't write. A bit like Evelyn Waugh and his Catholicism. You know, people said that, people say, you know, you're a terrible person. He says, yes, but if I wasn't a Catholic, I'd be even worse. I'd scarcely be a human being. So, you know, I believe he could be fairly awful to people. So, what he might have been like, who knows?
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger. For the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Well, I'm curious, what writing advice would you offer for those who are writing their own stories and novels?
I think the main pieces of advice, one, don't give up, obviously. If you keep on writing, if you persevere, it won't guarantee success, but if you're very bloody minded and you don't give up, then you do have a much better chance of eventually, you know, getting stuff published. The other thing is write what you want to write. One of the worst things you can do is, twisting yourself all out of shape, trying to write what you think other people want to read. And that can, you start writing stuff in a genre you're not interested in because it's more commercial stuff like that. That's just soul destroying to do that. So write what you love, and then get it published in whatever way you can, and then come in and do the next one.
That's great.
It's an ongoing process. So you just there's no big end point. There's no bit where you break through and suddenly become, you know, suddenly you're a success kind of thing. It's an ongoing thing, and the greatest satisfaction is from writing something that you are pleased with, at least for a time, because, you know, hopefully you get better as you go along, and then everything whenever you look at your own work, you start seeing all the things you didn't do right, and you see all the cracks you papered over. The unfortunate thing with your own writing, because you've seen the first draft and you know what a mess that was, and then you had to put that together into something. You know, was it Neil Gaiman says the secret of the point of the second draft is to make it look as if you knew what you were doing all along. And of course, none of us do. We're all desperately winging it. But yeah, if you can produce a piece of work which in the moment you're proud of, you're satisfied with, that's the biggest satisfaction of all. So yeah. Don't give
That's
up
great.
And do what you love and send your work out. Keep sending it out until it gets published. But if no one else will publish it, I suppose that's when you go the self-publishing route. Never done that myself, but it's one of those things. But that's probably due to laziness on my part and the whole thing of looking at, oh God, how do you do this? Oh, no. Let somebody else deal with this rubbish for me.
Well, what novels have you read, novels or short story collections have you read recently that you enjoyed?
Okay, well, most recently I've read Hayley Piper's Queen of Teeth, which is extraordinary. Anything, if you see the name Hayley Piper on anything, I would read it immediately. I've read so far the novella The Worm and His Kings, another novella called The Possession of Natalie Glasgow, and most recently Queen of Teeth. She's got another novel coming out called No Gods for Drowning. And even without knowing what it's about, I know I want to read it. She's got an incredible imagination. She's got incredible skill in characterization. And what's particularly brilliant is that she's able to bring in areas of life that are very much outside the mainstream. The Worm and His Kings is set in among homeless communities living in the subways under New York. And the protagonist is a trans woman whose lover goes missing. And he basically sets off on a quest to find her, and it leads her to this cult and to this religious stuff. Now, there's an awful lot of material rich in social commentary there. You know, the homelessness, there's the whole economic and social aspect of it, but also the sexual politics of life as a trans woman, as a gay woman. All of these in some hands could, you know, it, with the best will in the world, you know, we've all read stuff where however much we agree with sentiments being expressed, there starts to get this, you get this clunky, preached at feel, or you get this feel of, you know, a huge amount of infos being dumped on you. And what one of the things that really impressed me about The Worm and His Kings is how all of that was kind of woven, all of those aspects were woven so seamlessly into just beautiful, into the narrative flow of it. It really was about great storytelling that just pulled you in. So you just all of this stuff just was just part and parcel of it. You never felt there was never any sense of it being shoehorned in, which can be very difficult. I think as somebody who has in the past stuck political rants of one kind or another into his stuff, I know how easy it can be to lapse into lecture mode or infodum mode. And this one of the really impressive things about Piper's work is how seamlessly she's able to weave that into, in the case of The Worm and His Kings, an amazing, imaginative and original cosmic horror story. So there's one of the writers that I've been really impressed with lately. I'm currently reading Come With Me by Ronald Malfi. I've only read a couple of Malfi's books, but again, he's an excellent writer whose work kind of treads the boundary between the thriller and horror fiction. One writer I will always enjoy reading is Gemma Files, who's a Canadian writer who's absolutely, absolutely brilliant and writes extremely imaginative and twisted and sometimes downright kinky horror stories. She's a brilliant writer. We've become really good friends, and we actually started doing a podcast together, which where we basically get to talk bollocks about horror fiction and horror films and all the other weird stuff that we like. So if we can ever get some money out, make some money doing that, then it'll be basically be money for old rope, because it's like, wait a minute, what, you're gonna pay, people are gonna pay us for this? Amazing, suckers. If that ever works, you know. So those are sort of three writers just off the top of my head. There are a lot of extremely good writers out there. I often feel quite derelict in not reading, as you know. So there's so many new books out there, so much interesting new stuff out there, and you know, it's trying to sort of keep abreast of it and trying to. There's so many names. I'm thinking, oh God, I should really read this author or that author. But those are the ones just off the top of my head. If you called me back tomorrow and asked me the same question again, I'd probably give you another three or four names, completely different ones, but those are the ones in my head right now.
That's great. Well, where can people find you online if they'd like to learn more about you and your novel, The Hollows?
Well, somebody left me unsupervised long enough for me to set up a Twitter account. So you can find me as Danny the Church on Twitter. I have got a website which I really need to update. And I haven't bought a proper domain name for it yet. So let me just keep forgetting what it's actually what I've actually called it. But the main one would be the
Twitter
would be my Twitter account. I've put a link tree in the profile details there. So any other bits and pieces can be found there.
That's great. Well, again, we've been speaking with Daniel Church, author of the new novel, The Hollows. The novel is on sale now, so go buy a copy. And Daniel, thanks for doing this interview.
Thanks very much for having me, Jeff. All the best.
Absolutely.
Save big money on your kitchen project at Menards. We carry everything you need to turn your kitchen dreams into reality. Renovate your space with new cabinets from Cardell. They're ready to install and come in a variety of styles. Visit our kitchen showrooms in-store or go to Menards.com for free design estimates today. And don't forget to check out our weekly flyer for all of our hot deals going on now.